Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest in a little while this morning is going to be John Diamond, who has written a book entitled The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. But before we talk to John this morning, I wanted to do a brief news summary and to offer some observations about yesterday's show, where we had Jerry Smith on, of Weather Warfare, the Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. That's a fascinating book, and it became more fascinating for me not simply having read it, but having gone into some further detail and trying to research some of the things that Jerry and I talked about yesterday through the utilization of Google. There are all kinds of things that I'd like to zero in on that for future shows. One is this gentleman up in Canada, Dr. Michael Persinger, and his whole involvement in something called behavioral neuroscience. He's located, of course, up in Ontario, Canada. Is a professor at Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada. This whole fascinating topic of behavioral neuroscience and the whole business of the neurology of the spiritual experience, that all sounds like pretty creepy stuff when it's in the hands of state intelligence agencies. I'd like to learn more about that. The other thing that came up yesterday in today's show is we talked about the whole history of the application of the so-called HARP technology, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, is the whole business of patents. Who are some of the people who have been involved in obtaining patents, U.S. patents, for specific purposes related to research that has military applicability? In discussing this yesterday with Jerry Smith, I went ahead and researched online a few of the things that are in his book, including one United States patent in particular, 495-4709. That's United States patent 495-4709. If you want to research that on Google, some interesting things will come up in relationship to something called a high-resolution directional gamma ray detector. And this high-resolution directional gamma ray detector has some specifics in terms of military applicability. And the fellows who invented this particular thing are from Israel. And that patent was filed on August the 16th, 1989. It was later granted in 1990. What is this thing? High-resolution directional gamma ray detector. That's United States Patent 495-4709. I'd really like to learn more about this. And if you know anyone out there who has corroborative expertise in this field, I'd like to have a show discussing that specific patent and why it would be of interest to the Raytheon Corporation and to the government of Israel and to the other folks in the American and Israeli intelligence communities that are quite clearly involved directly or indirectly in this whole business of HARP. Weather modification, manipulation, warfare, all of that came up yesterday in the show with Jerry Smith. And I tell you, once you start delving into this a little bit and seeing just what can be corroborated through mainstream resources on the net, it becomes extremely disturbing to determine just where this might all be headed. We have a number of other interesting items that I want to take a look at, both in non-mainstream as well as mainstream media today. Mark Glenn sends me a note, which I'm only now looking at, unfortunately, but is talking about a program that was held last night by Dr. Hesham Talawi, which you can still get to, I understand, by going to www.currentissues.tv. The guests last night were Dr. David Duke, the former Louisiana State Representative who recently spoke at the Free Speech Conference hosted by the government of Iran, and Jeffrey Blankford was the guest in the second hour of that show. I suspect some interesting things came up. When we come back, I want to take a little bit more of a look at the news and then bring John Diamond on. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, and the Republic Broadcasting Network.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Mark Dan Cos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. In a short time this morning, my guest will be John Diamond, the author of The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. But I do want to mention a couple of news items, both those that are non-mainstream as well as those that involve mainstream corporate media, that particularly paint, I think, a very clear picture in regard to the ominous direction that we are heading in, both domestically as well as internationally. Check out LouRockwells.com today, The Warmongers Brigade by Michael Gaddy. He has a very interesting proposal for the development of something called the Warmongers Brigade in regard to the continued prosecution of the present disaster. Again, that's at LouRockwell.com, Michael Gaddy's The Warmongers Brigade. The New York Times has a very interesting story today. It's an op-ed piece. It's hard to, as a paleoconservative, to agree with the New York Times very often. But this thing came out on December 20th, and it's entitled, Only the Jailers Are Safe. I'm going to read something from this just so that you will get a taste for what it's talking about. I think that all of you who listen to the Republic Broadcasting Network will undoubtedly affirm the general gist of this editorial, where the Times says that ever since the world learned of the lawless state of American military prisons in Iraq, the administration has hidden behind the claim that only a few bad apples were brutalizing prisoners. President Bush also has dodged the full force of public outrage because the victims were foreigners, mostly Muslims, captured in what he has painted as a war against Islamic terrorists bent on destroying America. This week, the New York Times published two articles that reminded us again that the American military prisons are profoundly and systematically broken, and that no one is safe from the summary judgment and harsh treatment institutionalized by the White House and the Pentagon after 9/11. On Monday, Michael Moss wrote about a U.S. contractor who was swept up in a military raid and dumped into a system where everyone is presumed guilty and denied any chance to prove otherwise. Donald Vance, a 29-year-old Navy veteran from Chicago, was a whistleblower who prompted the raid by tipping off the FBI to suspicious activity at the company where he worked, including possible weapons trafficking. He was arrested and held for 97 days, shackled and blindfolded, prevented from sleeping by blaring music and round-the-clock lights. In other words, he was subjected to the same mistreatment that thousands of non-Americans have been subjected to since the 2003 invasion. Even after the military learned who Mr. Vance was, they continued to hold him in these abusive conditions for weeks more. He was not allowed to defend himself at the Potemkin hearing held to justify his detention. And that was special treatment. As an American citizen, he was at least allowed to attend his hearing. An Iraqi or an Afghani or any other foreigner would have been barred from the room. This is not the handiwork of a few out-of-control sadists at Abu Ghraib prison. This is a system that was created and operated outside American law and American standards of decency. Except for the few low-ranking soldiers periodically punished for abusing prisoners, it is a system without any accountability. Yesterday, David Johnston reported that nearly 20 cases in which civilian contractors were accused of abusing detainees have been sent to the Justice Department. So far, the record is perfect, not a single indictment. Administration officials said that prosecutors were hobbled by a lack of evidence and witnesses, or that the military's cases were simply shoddy. This sounds like another excuse from an administration that has papered over prisoner abuse and denied there is any connection between Mr. Bush's decision to flout the Geneva Conventions and the repeated cases of abuse and torture. We hope the new Congress will be more aggressive on this issue than the last one, which was more bent on preserving the Republican majority than preserving American values and rights. The lawless nature of Mr. Bush's war on terror has already cost the nation dearly in terms of global prestige, while increasing the risks facing every American serving in the military. That's the New York Times. I think in principle I would agree with most of what it says in this op-ed piece, with one exception. I hold out no hope that the Democratic Congress will be any better. Check out something online from goldmoney.com today. James Turk, who is the founder of goldmoney.com, talks about Iran, the euro, and the dollar with all kinds of links. And he says that there are now three strikes against the dollar. The markets are winding down for the year-end holidays, and as a consequence, little consideration or attention is being paid to three events, each of which adds another nail to the dollar's coffin. Number one, folks, and we've been talking about this for a period of weeks now and months, number one is Iran and euros. Iran and euros. Though it has been given scant attention in the United States, Iran's decision to drop the dollar in favor of the euro has been receiving widespread attention in Europe. As reported by AFP on Monday, Iranian government spokesman Gholam Hossein Ilham told news reporters, quote, "The Iranian government has ordered the central bank to replace the dollar with the euro in commercial transactions," unquote, repeating exactly what Saddam Hussein did in September of 2000. Lest there be any misunderstanding, Ilham went on to say, quote, "Foreign income sources and oil revenues will be calculated in euros, and we will receive them in euros in order to put an end to our dependence on the dollar," unquote. This change will lessen the demand for dollars, which will cause the value of the dollar to drop. Strike one. Strike two, according to James Turk, is the U.S. ban on the melting and export of coin. A very lengthy discussion of that particular contingency. Number three is increasing government control. I won't read those sections of the report because of the length and because of time constraints today. But again, take a look at that. That's Gold Money, James Turk, on Iran, the euro, and the dollar. Is corporate media always wrong? I would suggest that sometimes corporate media finds itself telling the truth even when it doesn't want to. There's a story in yesterday's Washington Post that I want all of my listeners to be aware of, and it's written by somebody named Casey, K-A-S-I-E, Casey Hunt, H-U-N-T, entitled Agency to Test Military Draft Machinery. Here we go, folks. The Selective Service System is planning a comprehensive test of the military draft machinery, which hasn't been run since 1998. The agency is not gearing up for a draft, an agency official said Thursday. Ho, ho, ho. The test itself would not likely occur until 2009. Meanwhile, the Secretary for Veteran Affairs said that, quote, society would benefit, unquote, if the United States were to bring back the draft, and that it shouldn't have any loopholes for anyone who is called to serve. VA Secretary Jim Nicholson later issued a statement saying he does not support reinstituting a draft. Figure that one out, folks. There's a lot of doublespeak there. But that's the Washington Post yesterday, Thursday, agency to test military draft machinery. I'll let you read the report in its entirety, but quite clearly this is ominous stuff coming out of Washington, D.C., in this case not appearing in non-mainstream press, but in this instance from corporate-controlled press, which is coming forth on occasion to tell the truth even when it doesn't want to. Agency to test military draft machinery. That's the Washington Post yesterday. Bush signs bill denying aid to Hamas-led authority. This is something that comes to us from Reuters. President Bush on Thursday signed into law legislation restricting aid to the Hamas-led Palestinian Authority until it recognizes Israel's right to exist, makes financial reforms, and takes other steps. The United States, the European Union, and others regard Hamas as a terrorist group and have already cut off direct aid to the government. Hamas rose to power in parliament after defeating Fatah in January. The ban has crushed the government's ability to function and the Palestinian economy. Interesting, isn't it, how we want democracy in the Middle East, and yet when there's a democratic election and the faction wins that we don't like, then we engage in economic sanctions and end up with boycotts and presidentially signed executive orders and the president's signing of legislation coming out of Congress. And here we find, something that has all kinds of implications for what would appear to be an ongoing process of violence in Palestine, a complete lack of resolution of the situation in Gaza and the West Bank. And once again, the entire onus for this situation is being placed, it seems to me, by the President of the United States and on the American Congress with the Palestinians and not with Israel. The United States confirms backing Assad's opposition in Syria. This is a post today from the Jerusalem Post. Quite fascinating that I did not see this posted in the American press. Maybe it's there and missed it. It's been updated today from yesterday's post. But lo and behold, the United States government confirmed Thursday morning a Time magazine report that it was working to secretly strengthen factions opposing the Assad regime in Syria. It's doing so secretly that it's confirming Time magazine reports to this effect. And it seems to me that if you look at that post in the Jerusalem Post entitled United States Confirms Backing Assad Opposition in Syria, that once again we have a foreign policy rooted in secrecy, rooted in interventionism, rooted in all of the presuppositions of the Jewish-controlled neoconservative movement in the United States and abroad, endgame unknown, but apparently involving a wider war that one suspects at some juncture will involve both Syria and Iran. One other thing that's worth noting, and that is that we now have the mainstream press's take on the elections in Iran for the Assembly of Experts, as well as for the Tehran Council seats. In the capital of Tehran, according to USA Today, Ahmadinejad's allies grabbed only 3 of the 15 council seats, while his main rival, the mayor of Tehran, Mohammad Bakar Kalabaf, won 7. He is considered to be a quote-unquote moderate conservative, whatever that means in IRI terms. Reformists picked up 4 seats, and the last seat went to an independent. Final results in other parts of the country also showed a heavy defeat for Ahmadinejad supporters. None of his candidates won seats in the councils in the cities of Shiraz, Bandar Abbas, Sari, Sanjan, Rasht, Ilam, Sandajan, and Kerman. And many councils in other cities were divided along similar proportions as Tehran's, as well as the fact that Rafsanjani is apparently on the ascendancy again as a result of the Assembly of Experts elections. When we come back, we will talk to John Diamond, The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. Stay tuned.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Matson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. It's basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Dancos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is John Diamond, author of The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. One more news story before I introduce John and begin our conversation. Check out today's Jerusalem Post at JerusalemPost or jpost.com. This comes to us from Israel, courtesy of Yaakov Katz. He says that in a dramatic conclusion concerning the future of the state of Israel, the latest edition of the Middle East Strategic Balance compiled by the Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies and released to the public on Thursday calls for military action to stop Iran's nuclear program. Prepared annually by JCSS at Tel Aviv University, the Middle East Strategic Balance provides an authoritative and indispensable guide to strategic developments and military capabilities in the Middle East by offering a comprehensive, insightful assessment of the complex strategic environment of the Middle East. The report is considered something of a Bible for military analysts who follow developments in the region. The 2005-2006 edition was compiled by former IAF intelligence officer Yiftah Shapir and Brigadier General retired Zevi Shatuber. Shatuber is a former ambassador to the United Kingdom and was a member of the Israeli delegations to peace talks with Syria and the Palestinians Quoting Schutuber here, he told the Jerusalem Post Thursday, "Our conclusion is that without military action, you won't be able to stop Iran." The United Nations Security Council is set to vote Friday on a sanctions resolution against Iran, which has been revised in response to Russian objections. The latest draft, if approved, would order all countries to ban the supply of specified materials and technology that could contribute to Iran's nuclear and missile programs. The proposed sanctions would also include freezing the assets of a list of companies and individuals involved in the country's nuclear and missile programs. Despite the impending vote and increased diplomatic action, Schutuber said he believed it was too late for sanctions. Quote, "There is no longer a possibility for effective sanctions to stop Iran," unquote. Shapir recently told the Jerusalem Post that Israel has the military capability to destroy at least part of Iran's nuclear installations, to the point that it would be possible to delay Iran's acquisition of nuclear weapons. Earlier in the week, Mossad chief Meir Dagan said that Iran had recently increased efforts to enrich nuclear fuel. Dagan estimated that Iran would be able to begin building a nuclear bomb by 2009. Here we have it, folks. The impending preemptive strike against Iran is now entering into the latest phases of corporate mainstream press in Israel and elsewhere. I suspect that 1 year from today, the world, if it's still here, will look a lot different than it does now. John Diamond, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for coming on. I apologize for the length of my news summary, but I had 8 or 9 things that I kind of wanted to bring into play and into the broadcast in the beginning. John, tell us a little bit about yourself and then discuss what you see as this whole business of what the American crisis is and what you mean by your title, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis.
Yeah, Mark. I was born and raised here in Columbus, Ohio. That's where I'm at now. I spent nearly 8 years in the Air Force as a security policeman. When I went in the Air Force, of course, everybody that enlists takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Well, you know, when I was 18 years old, not having been taught the Constitution in the schools or in the public schools or anything, I took the oath and didn't really know what I was doing. But later in life, you know, as I became a Christian, as I began to watch a lot of the political debates over things such as separation of church and state, the Ten Commandments monument down in Alabama, I really started hearing some things on primarily Fox News when I would hear the two sides debate, that they would say, you know, our founding fathers believed this, that our founding fathers believed that. The other side would say 180 degree, just the opposite. So in an attempt not to be deceived by either side, what I did, and I was between my bachelor's in theology and my master's in education, I was had a little piece of time there. I just started studying. I just started studying the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Journal of the Constitutional Convention, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, and I wanted to see which of these groups was lying to me. I wanted to see what our founding fathers really created when they created the government, and I wanted to see what they believed the impact that religion should have on our society and on our government. What I found after reading all that is our country is going exactly 180 degrees in a different direction than when our founding fathers created it. So that's what really led me to write this book.
Well, you know, editorializing a minute on this, John, it seems to me that as I have examined this whole thing of the Constitution, with less time spent on it, I'm sure, than you have for your book, but I have talked to a few people as well that have put me on to some excellent educational materials on this. John Eidsmo, for example, who has come up with something called the Institute on the Constitution, has helped to shape my thinking on this in recent years. It seems to me that what we're talking about in this instance is not simply the inversion of the constitutional relationship between the federal government and the states, but we're now talking, in my view, about a whole movement toward world government. And when we come back from the commercial break, I want to discuss that concept with you to see if that's your take on it as well. This is Mark Gankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with John Diamond after the break and his book, The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly. American Free Press. AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is John Diamond, who has authored a book entitled The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. John, this whole business of world government I was starting to get into just before the first commercial break, where it seems to me that, my own reading of all of this is, and I'm not saying that it's inerrant, but my own reading of this is that you have so many strains in American history. One, clearly the Federalist, Anti-Federalist controversy, which seemed to be decided in favor of the Federalists. Then you had what I would perceive to be the complete inversion of the constitutional relationship between the federal government and the states, as a result of Lincoln's war against the states, against those that refused to submit to his particular version of events and his particular version of how the federal government was supposed to be run. Then we run into some of the people that created the prototype, I suspect, of the modern American presidency, speaking of people like Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the movement toward an all-powerful chief executive. You had at the beginning of the 20th century the establishment of a direct federal income tax on citizens and the creation of the Federal Reserve Board, basically taking monetary policy out of the hands of the Congress. I mean, there are just so many things here to me, that coalesce into what is now a movement toward globalist government, world government. Is that your feeling?
Oh, that's absolutely right. You know, sometimes when I speak, I give the analogy that if you got 50 eggs laying there and you want to give them to another person, you have to first take those 50 eggs and put them in a basket, and then you're able to take that basket and give it away. That's exactly what they've had to do with our government. Our founding fathers created a government in which each of the states, and there wasn't 50 at the time, but each of the states was sovereign. They ran their own lives, and the whole kind of argument throughout my book is I go to the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, which says that the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution and not prohibited by the states, are reserved to the states. And what I tell people, I said, we have to remember that the states existed. There were 13 sovereign states there. They created the federal government. But when they did, they said, look, we're going to create you, but we're going to give you just a tiny bit of power. You can create post offices, you can coin money, you can sign treaties. Everything else is our responsibility, and you need to leave us alone. Well, what I do through the book is I just kind of show you how our American government has evolved. I have what I call five American revolutions, where I show, and you talked about Abraham Lincoln. I use that as one. I go back and I talk about the Supreme Court case of Marbury versus Madison, where the Supreme Court basically gave itself veto power over federal legislation. If you study the Constitution and the Constitutional Convention, they argued about that. They said, should we give the Supreme Court veto power over the Congress? And they denied it. They said, no, we're not going to give the Supreme Court that power. Instead, they gave it to the president. Well, what happened in 1803 was they gave themselves that power. So what I do is I give these little snapshots through American history to show, you said Abraham Lincoln, how his war against the states. And I just go through American history to show how all of our state sovereignty has been really taken one court case and one ruling at a time until all those eggs are now in a basket. And now what we have is the federal government who is starting to go to European constitutions to make rulings on how the Americans should live. So we are definitely headed in that direction.
Well, yes, and, you know, to me, the most obvious recent glaring example of this has been this business of the Security and Prosperity Partnership agreement pertaining to a so-called North American Union, where in March of last year, the President of the United States, the then President of Mexico, and the Prime Minister of Canada concocted this arrangement that would basically, in my view, and the view of people who know a lot more about this than I do, folks like Jerome Corsi, who's written on this for WorldNet Daily, would create an equivalent, I guess, of the European Union, where the United States and Mexico and Canada would find themselves increasingly being merged into one so-called free trade zone. You would have a seamless, borderless situation between those three entities over time. There's now the publicity that in certain quarters has surrounded the what will be the building of a NAFTA superhighway between Lorenzo Cardenas in Mexico, all the way up through the I-35 corridor of this state, Texas, on up into Kansas City, ultimately into Duluth, ultimately into Canada, I understand. And this whole thing, aside from the economic implications of it in terms of the American manufacturing sector of the economy, is quite clearly another move toward creating another layer of global bureaucracy where economic and political decisions, and military decisions, for that matter, are being made by global entities, not by the United States Congress, and certainly not by the American people. And I don't see, frankly, any way of dealing with this at this point. It's like with NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization and the Most Favored Nation trading thing for Communist China some years ago, that we continued to see the American public's acquiescence to all of this, even though it was unconstitutional, even though it was globalist, even though it was destroying piece by piece their political and economic freedoms. Yet nonetheless, we've now arrived at what seems like the latest phase of this with this North American Union talk. How in the world do we turn this around?
Well, you put your finger on it exactly. I mean, one reason is, and this is what I stress in my book, the American people have basically just said, okay, Supreme Court, you decide for us what's constitutional and unconstitutional. In our government that our founding fathers created, which is, of course, not a democracy but a republic, the power was to be in the hands of the people. If the Supreme Court was to ever make a ruling that the American people did not agree with, they were under no obligation just to bow down and just obey them. I got a quote in my book from Thomas Jefferson that said that, you know, if you think the Supreme Court is this all-supreme tribunal that gets to determine every constitutional issue in America, he goes, you're wrong. That's not what we created. And then he goes on to say, the Constitution creates no such tribunal. So, in my opinion, and this is why I had written this book, one of the first steps we have to do, and it's exactly what you're doing and a lot of the unmainstream press is doing, is educating the American people. And that's what I do in this book. I show them the type of government that our founding fathers created, that the power was supposed to be in their hands, not in Congress, not in the federal government, not in the Supreme Court, but in the hands of the individual people and the individual states. But since the people, A, are ignorant of their Constitution because it's not being taught in the schools, I even quote Pat Robertson, who said that he went to 3 years of Yale Law School. He said, and from the first day he walked in, he was given great big leather-bound editions of everybody else's opinion of the Constitution, and not once in his whole time was he ever required to read it. That is the crux of the problem. The American people, and even many lawyers and many judges, do not understand the Constitution, do not understand what we are guaranteed under the Constitution, and they're just basically bowing down to a government that's making a lot of rulings that it has no right to make. And now you talk about, you know, North America kind of NAFTA-type situation. The American people, and that's why I appreciate what you guys are doing, the American people need to be awakened to that, because if they think that that's going to favor America, we're going to get the raw deal on that. I work as a lineman for an electric company here in Columbus, Ohio. That's my primary occupation. A buddy of mine, his son-in-law is a truck driver. He's allowed to take a truck down to the Mexican border, and he has to drop it off, and somebody has to come and get it. But on the other side, they're allowed to bring theirs straight into America and drive anywhere around and do what they've got to do. So if we think that this is going to somehow favor us or just even equal the playing field, you know, we're absolutely wrong.
Well, you know, there are so many spin-off derivatives from a number of different things that we're touching upon. We were talking a little bit about this whole business of an unconstitutional judicial activism and the very dangerous assumption that whatever the Supreme Court says is the law of the land, which I think you've gone into some discussion of that in terms of how that does not square with the founding fathers at all.
Right.
If it is determined that the Supreme Court has acted capriciously and has issued something that is in and of itself a violation of the Constitution, I want to take this into maybe three areas that we've all touched upon just briefly here. The first I hesitate to mention because sometimes people, for understandable reasons, focus more narrowly on the moral issues involved. But going back to the Roe versus Wade abortion case in January of 1973, putting aside just for a moment what many of us feel on that particular subject in regard to both revealed and natural law, just as far as the rationale that was used by the Supreme Court of the United States when it reached this judgment in January of 1973, it seemed to me just incredibly dangerous, not simply in terms of the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States suddenly said that there was a constitutional right to something, that something like 45 out of 50 states said was a criminal act, involved criminal activity, but then as far as this whole business of abortion is concerned, just as one example, the Supreme Court was finding rights in relationship, say, to this question that are nowhere to be found in terms of being specifically enumerated. So you have the Supreme Court saying, hey, this is now the law of the land. This is what the Constitution says. We have issued this particular proclamation. And now everyone acts as though that is where we go from here. I find that not simply to be a highly dangerous concept in terms of the specifics of the abortion issue, but on virtually anything that you could care to discuss, any policy issue. If the Supreme Court of the United States just came out with an edict where all they would need would be a 5-4 majority to say that anything was constitutional or anything was lawful, you quite clearly, it seems to me, would have what real conservatives have been talking about for years, and that is the whole question of the federal judiciary of the United States usurping the constitutional prerogatives of the Congress and of the states.
That's absolutely right, and you articulate that, I mean, quite well. You know, what they have done, and it's actually a layered kind of debate, but what they're doing, as you said, they're reading rights into the Constitution that never existed, for one. The right to abortion. They use you know, we talk about same-sex marriage, when they banned all the laws dealing with homosexuality. Things like that. They're reading things in the Constitution that doesn't even exist. But if you go one layer deeper than that, it comes right down to the Supreme Court's jurisdiction to even hear these cases. They were never granted to the constitutional right to even hear the cases that they're hearing. All these cases were to be handled at the state level and by the state Supreme Court. They should have never been even able to hear the cases when you do that. And that's what I do in this book. I go back to the Constitution when they're arguing about the power of the Supreme Court, and then the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court back then, John Marshall, there was a debate in my book between him and Mason about the power that the Supreme Court was going to be given. And I'll just quote right from my book. It says, Marshall saw no danger to the states from decrees from the Supreme Court. He says this, "I hope that no gentleman will think that a state will be called to the bar of the federal court. It is not rational to suppose that a sovereign power should be dragged before a federal court." So even when they were drafting the Constitution, he said, yes, we're creating a Supreme Court, but it's just to overlook federal legislature. It's not to overlook state constitutions or state laws or states' rights. It's basically it's a check and balance at the federal level. They were never even given the jurisdiction to be able to stick their nose in the state's business. And what I do in one of the chapters of my book, it was after the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was written that gave the federal government just a little bit of power to stick their foot in the door. What happened is there's like five cases from 1860 up to about 1912 where they tried to federalize the Bill of Rights, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and they tried to put that under federal control. The Supreme Court, and I got the cases right in my book, the Supreme Court continually and repeatedly said, this is none of the federal government's business. Our founding fathers created a government of the people, by the people, and that's where it's going to stay. I think it was 1918, the Supreme Court actually said, this question is no longer open to this court. But in 1925, they reversed 125 years of history, and they reversed every other Supreme Court precedent and said, no, now we do have. The 14th Amendment gives us the right to rule on all the rights of the American people. That was unconstitutional from the very beginning, and that's what the American people need to be awakened to, that they exceeded their jurisdiction. And everything they're doing now, from separation of church and state to abortion to same-sex marriage to, I mean, whether it's financial, whether it's a World Bank, whatever it is you're talking about, they're making rulings in areas that they have no constitutional authority to. And because of that, the American people are under no obligation to follow somebody who's acting beyond their authority.
So you would see this whole business of the 14th Amendment and the interpretation of the 14th Amendment as going hand in hand with such things as the imposition of a direct federal income tax on American citizens and the creation of a Federal Reserve Board is basically in tandem with one another moving us in the direction of what ultimately would become a despotism.
That's absolutely right. I couldn't have said it any better myself. When you trace this all back to the very root, cause of all of this, what it comes down to is during the Civil War, they wrote the 14th Amendment just to be able to give the federal Congress the power if people didn't want to give the former slaves their rights, that the federal government could step in. For like 70 years, the Supreme Court understood that the 14th Amendment was nothing more than an amendment to make sure that the federal government would have the power to make sure the states were treating the former slaves right. That is the only reason that amendment was created. What the Supreme Court did in order to usurp states' rights, they applied, and I'll use separation of church and state when they made that heinous ruling. They said the 14th Amendment is now linked with the First Amendment, and now the federal government has no right to support or endorse religion. Well, they just overturned 150 years of history to do that. You know, you have to be a fool to believe that our founding fathers, you know, did not want religion to play a key role in society and even in government. When they wrote the First Amendment, it basically says Congress shall make no law. That is the only branch of government that is forbidden by the Constitution to make law, for one. It doesn't say Congress can't support religion. I mean, one of the first acts that the Revolutionary Congress did was buy 20,000 Bibles because of the shortage that the war had created. They continually called for days of prayer and fasting. George Washington wrote a letter to the Indians saying, you know, you'd be much happier if you found the religion of Christ, and we will help you in this matter. So it's a sovereignty, and it's a jurisdiction issue.
John, we'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can give us a call at 1-800-313-9443. Stay tuned for John Diamond after the break.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is John Diamond, the author of The Rise of America, Fighting the Next Revolution and the American Crisis. Before we get back to John, I just wanted to alert him and also to alert our listeners that this is that point in the show where I do a couple of housekeeping items. And the housekeeping items are as follows. You can have new Republic Broadcasting Network T-shirts available at rbnlive.com or at notyranny.com. Or you can call the Republic Broadcasting Network office at 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Again, the point on the web is rbnlive.com or notyranny.com. You can also have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism. That's yours if you contact the Republic Broadcasting Network at rbnlive.com or at 1-800-724-2719. That DVD will cost $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. And in regard to giving gifts to this network, we pray that you will do that as well, for we need all the support that we can get to provide you with an alternative to corporate mainstream media in regard to the stories we cover, the guests that we have, and the analysis that we give you. You can do that by contacting us again at rbnlive.com or giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719. And if you have a question or a comment on today's show, you can give us a call at 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. Now, John, we're going to be interrupted a couple of times in about the next 6 or 7 minutes with a couple of additional commercial breaks, and then there will be a longer period for conversation. But in regard to a lot of these issues, I watch what has happened in this country just in my lifetime, and the cultural issues, the economic issues, the foreign policy issues. What do you see as the inherent danger of presidential war-making powers that seem to be completely contradicted by the Constitution, and to what extent are we looking at something either with Lincoln during the American War between the States or with Franklin Roosevelt as a model in some of the post-World War II, post-FDR presidents, of utilizing executive orders to do things that the Congress and the people have not authorized in the case of such things as Mr. Bush's current involvement in Iraq, have not met the constitutional standard of a formal declaration of war on the part of said Congress.
Well, that's absolutely right. You know, we talk about the Constitution and whether or not he even had the authority to go ahead and do that. I mean, the federal government, like we've been talking about, the federal government's been doing things for the last 60 years that didn't have any business doing, any constitutional right to do it. So, I mean, you know, like you said, you know, basically sticking our nose and using our tax dollars in places where it does not belong. And be honest with you, as a Christian, I'm not sure I can support an offensive war, as Thomas Paine said. I think it's our right to defend ourselves, but when we go after another person, I really kind of think that violates my biblical morality.
Yeah, I want to explore that a little bit more with you, John, when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with John Diamond, fighting the next revolution and the American crisis when we return.
Everyone agrees our children are the future leaders of this great nation. How can we expect the founding values of our great republic to continue with future generations when these same values are being phased out of the government-run school system? There is a solution. The Little Red Schoolhouse Project, a community-based school system founded by Dr. Jake Wade to provide a biblical and constitutionally based education for our children. Help us prepare the next generation in our fight for freedom. Ask us how you can help by writing to Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616, or by calling 512-398-4833. Once again, that is Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616. Support your local Little Red Schoolhouse. Call 512-398-4833 and ask how you can help ensure no student is turned away.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.